You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. They make it super simple. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with coverage options tailored to your choices. Plus, you'll see which discounts you may qualify for, like the online quote discount or savings for paying in full. In fact, 99% of Progressive Auto customers earn at least one discount. See if you could save when you switch to Progressive. You'll feel good about making a savvy choice. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little extra cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Cha-ching! That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's. In-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
I'm Saruti.
I'm Hannah.
And welcome to Red Handed. And today it's a mystery. We are covering the disappearance of five-month-old Sabrina Eisenberg.
We haven't had a mystery for a while, hey?
No, we haven't. That's what I was thinking. I feel like people say that they don't like mysteries and they like the ones where someone is caught.
Yeah.
But then when we did the poll for the Patreon live episode, everyone voted for unsolved mysteries.
That's so true, actually. Make your fucking mind up.
Yeah, I don't believe you guys. So we do have a mystery for you today. And it's been 21 years now since Sabrina went missing from her home, from her crib in Valrico, a suburb in Tampa, Florida. She was the youngest child in a very ordinary seeming family. Mum Marlene, Dad Steve, two other siblings, 6-year-old Monica and 10-year-old William. In all the home videos before Sabrina's disappearance, they do seem like your genuinely happy, normal family.
But on the 24th of November 1997, five-month-old Sabrina disappeared. That morning, at around 6 a.m, Marlene woke up, and according to her, as she stepped into the hallway, she could tell that something was wrong. The house was linked to their garage, and they had an internal door that connected the two. And this door to the garage was open. Marlene said that she panicked because she sensed that something was wrong. She ran to check on Sabrina, but there was just an empty crib. Baby Sabrina was gone. Marlene screamed and woke up her husband, Steve.
Okay, question. Why does she run straight to Sabrina's room? Because she does have two other kids. If the door's open, wouldn't you be more worried about the 6-year-old's run outside or something? Like, Sabrina can't even get out of the crib. She's 5 months old, she can't even lift herself up.
That's so interesting, actually. If something happened in your house, who would be the first person you'd run to check on?
If the door was open, my dog, because I think he'd run out.
Me too.
I don't know. In some places I did read that Sabrina's room was the closest to the garage door, and this is why maybe Marlene ran there. But I couldn't find anywhere the solid floor plan of the house, so we can't 100% confirm this. It's just something interesting. She senses something wrong, but runs immediately to Sabrina's room. However, what was clear was that the garage door was open and the internal door to the Eisenberg's house, as you said, Hannah, was unlocked. And Sabrina was gone. And Sabrina, like we said, when she was barely 5 months old, there was no way she could lift herself out of that crib. So Marlene calls 911. And here's a snippet of that call.
My baby's been kidnapped. Oh God, my baby's gone. My baby's gone.
As you can hear, she sounds frantic. And as you can imagine, this was an absolute dream case for the press, and they flocked to it. The disappearance of Sabrina Eisenberg was the lead story for months, because as the case played out, there was something new being revealed almost every day.
You can just imagine it, can't you? She's a baby, it's a young family, it's so classic, it's like classic tabloid fodder, they fucking love that shit. And the questions started as early as the 911 call. What was quite weird was that the 911 operator had to ask Marlene if there were any other kids in the house. Marlene said yes, and the operator told her to check on them, and that's when her and Steve go to check. That is peculiar because you would think if one of your children is gone, the first thing you would think to do is look at the other ones. I think that's really strange that she had to be told to.
And which case does that remind us of? JonBenet, they never went to check on Burke.
Because he did it.
I mean, yes, that's a story for a whole nother day. But it is really weird. Sabrina's missing, the door's open. Yes, okay, she can't lift herself out of the crib. What if the 10-year-olds picked her up and carried her off somewhere?
Okay, maybe it's your favourite child, whatever. That's the reason that you go and check on them first. That I can not excuse, but I can get there logically. I can't understand why you wouldn't check on the other two. And it's further weirdness because the 911 operator asked Marlene if they had searched the house for Sabrina, and that they said that they hadn't. And perhaps this is less weird, but there was no way she could have done it on her own. So I can kind of see, we're like, oh, she must be gone because she can't have got out of the crib on her own. But to call the police before you've even looked in the cupboard or whatever is odd to me.
And it didn't stop there. Because as they waited for the police to arrive, Steve ran to a neighbour's house. It was the home of Scott Middleton, a former Tampa police officer. Steve apparently ran to Scott's house and told him what had happened. At this point, Scott's wife ran out and saw Marlene standing outside her house, waving. Scott said this made him feel immediately suspicious because he said there was no emotion on Marlene's face and her behaviour didn't match with the story he'd just heard from Steve.
There was news footage from later on, and it shows Marlene looking distraught. It's really confusing with this case because there are people like Scott Middleton and the police who say the family were behaving really oddly and they didn't seem emotional enough. And like, we see this all the time. People have a preconceived notion of how they think people should react in a crisis. And when they don't see it, it unnerves them. But you can't just decide how the correct way to react to a situation like this. Like, you're never going to know how you're going to react to a situation like this until someone actually steals your baby, and then you can say how you would react on camera. There are also friends who said that Marlene was an absolute mess. So you could say, on the one hand, that the police and Scott, having been a police officer, would know better than anyone how people behave at times like this on average. I don't even know if it means anything, though. Like, everyone has different reactions to things. I can understand why, if you're a police person and you've seen situations like this over a long period of time, and this one sticks out.
Yeah, but I think you're right in what you were saying before. It's a really dangerous game to get caught up in analysing people's reactions. It's definitely tempting, though. And it's human nature to pick apart someone's emotions with our own behaviours in mind, but it just makes no sense to do it. And we don't want to keep talking about their lack of emotions in this case because it's so basic, and we think the story they tell is what we should really focus on. But it is, I'll admit, really hard to get away from it, so it will come up. But at all times, we will discuss it as part of the whole story rather than in isolation, which is what you constantly see with this case almost everywhere else.
So let's get it out of the way now. Yes, they are slightly robotic and unemotional. Yes, whenever Marlene started to cry on camera, she was dry-eyed. There are no real tears, and it does seem forced and odd. But the point is, it doesn't prove anything. It proves absolutely nothing. So yes, you can argue, look how cold and unemotional they are, but it's irrelevant.
In that case, it basically means that they really hated this child and they're so happy that she's dead. Or they're both total psychopaths. But if they were remorseless psychopaths, wouldn't they have put on a better show? If they were psychopaths, wouldn't they have tried to seem more upset? And if they weren't psychopaths and they'd killed her, then they must have really hated her. They must have really wanted her gone and be like so relieved that they can't even hold back how chill they are now that this baby is dead. Because I really think innocent people can end up looking more guilty in these situations because they aren't concerned with looking guilty. That's the key thing.
That's what Clive Stafford Smith says. Innocent yeah. People are the most difficult to defend.
Because their front of their mind isn't, I need to look innocent. Their front of their mind is, fuck, our daughter is missing.
But this is not us saying that we think that they are innocent. We're just saying that the emotions or lack thereof don't prove involvement one way or another. But actions and behaviour and words These are things that we should definitely be paying attention to. Something we found odd was that they hardly seem to blame themselves, and perhaps this is unfair, but we are just going off interviews that we've watched, but in all of the videos we've seen, the only time they talk about their carelessness with leaving two doors open was when Marlene says this.
Every night we kick myself because we didn't use an alarm and we had one. Every night, but I'm not going to dwell on it.
Maybe it's just unfortunate choice of words, but kick ourselves. I'll not dwell on it. Really?
You can't... you know what? My baby is gone, but I can't beat myself up forever. That's such a weird...
It's a weird phrase, and I feel like we kick ourselves every day. If my baby was stolen, I feel like I would be like... I wouldn't be using something as casual as like, yes, I'll kick myself every day. Mm. It's, I want to die. Like, and then the idea of like, but I won't dwell on it. It seems really casual. Pretty much as soon as the police arrive after the 911 call, I strongly think that they already would have had two scenarios in mind, and they were totally right to do so. One, Sabrina had been kidnapped. Or two, Sabrina was killed by someone in the house.
When they get to the Eisenbergs' house, it was a mess. And I don't mean because the family had torn it apart looking for Sabrina. I mean like hoarder style. I've seen this once. I was in a coffee shop and I saw a woman take a teaspoon and put it in her pocket. It's like that kind of hoarding. It looked like no one had ever cleaned and the police suspected neglect.
There's just stuff everywhere. There's just stuff everywhere. They never clean. But it's weird because the family always look really polished. But the house is a total mess.
But family and friends came to the rescue telling the police, oh, that's just Marlene. That's fucked. Like if their house is that bad, you know?
Oh, yeah. And like, what's Steve doing? That's just Marlene. They both worked. The story the Eisenbergs tell the police is that they forgot to lock the doors before they went to bed and that someone must have snuck in and taken baby Sabrina. Okay, so let's consider this and what we'd have to believe for this to be the case. We'd have to believe that this person just so happened to find their doors unlocked, or they were stalking the family and they knew that they rarely locked their doors. This is a bit weird. Why are you not locking your doors when you've got three kids? I guess it's small town, suburbs, they felt safe. Also, look at the mess in their house. They clearly just weren't very responsible people, maybe. You know, maybe somebody was stalking them and they knew that they didn't lock their doors and then they sneak in. Even then, we're saying that they sneak into the house in the middle of the night and no one heard them. Also, it's key to mention at this point that the Eisenbergs had a dog, Brownie. And he's not like a little, you know, tiny little dog. He's a big fucking dog and very Sherlock Holmes-esque. Isn't this the classic, the dog who didn't bark? Isn't this a key point of interest? Because they said Brownie didn't bark. How is your dog not barking at someone entering your house in the middle of the night? My dog would bark.
Any dog. I find it very, unless it didn't have any vocal cords, like I find it really difficult to believe that any dog wouldn't bark an intruder in the middle of the night.
Absolutely. And the argument to this could be that did the dog know the intruder? But even then, I feel like a surprise visit in the middle of the night. Wouldn't your dog still bark? Like, sometimes if I come home really late, Blue will bark. As soon as he sees me, he'll stop, but he'll bark.
Coming in late, you're just like, oh God, don't wake the dog.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And when questioned about Brownie the dog, Scott Peterson, the neighbour and former cop, said that Brownie barked at everything.
But their family friend, the same one who said Marlene had been a mess the day of the disappearance, who vouched for Marlene saying she was a good mum but just bad at housekeeping, said the dog never barked at anything. And in the interview, she's so adamant about it. And it's, you just get a lot of this in this case of people swearing on their life that it's one way or the other. The hugely contradictory information the neighbour gives to what the friend gives is odd. Like, who is more motivated to lie? I can't see either of them having a particularly strong motivation. Like, what do they have to gain? It seems very strange. Scott Peterson, is he lying because he's so sure that the family did it and he just wants justice done? Or is the friend lying because she wants to protect the Eisenbergs? Like, if either one of them are lying, it points to guilt in some way.
Yeah, either that or it's very innocuous and they're both just, they're innocently mistaken, their point of view. I don't really know. But the other thing is, if it was an intruder, he or she would have had to know exactly where they were going, while still being totally silent and apparently doing all of this in the dark. For the intruder story to make sense, doesn't it sound like it would have had to been someone, if we're going to believe it, someone who was incredibly familiar with the house and with the family dog. So they know when they go in, they know exactly where Sabrina's bedroom is, they know the layout of the house, and they know that Brownie won't bark at them. But if this was the case, and the person stole Sabrina to raise, wouldn't that person have been a friend who then suddenly vanished? Wouldn't the family have noticed? Like, people don't steal babies, go through that much effort to steal a baby to kill. You steal a baby, go through that much effort to keep it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, I think.
Or sell it, because the family's theory has always been that Sabrina was stolen for adoption. And some people seem to think, this was an interesting thing I read, that perhaps someone wanted an ethnically Jewish baby and they were willing to pay. So Sabrina was stolen to be sold.
I just think if you're running an underground baby trafficking ring, isn't snatching babies from cots in suburban Florida quite high risk?
Yeah.
It just seems very odd that that's how you would choose to do that. If you're trafficking babies, why are you snatching them in the middle of the night?
This is as high risk a crime as you can imagine, and therefore point to somebody being very criminally sophisticated. This isn't somebody who just wandered in out of the blue on the off chance and picked up Sabrina. If it was an intruder.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. They make it super simple. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with coverage options tailored to your choices. Plus, you'll see which discounts you may qualify for, like the online quote discount or savings for paying in full. In fact, 99% of Progressive Auto customers earn at least one discount. See if you could save when you switch to Progressive. You'll feel good about making a savvy choice. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little extra cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If your service lights on, trust the techs with the training.
That's us.
270 hours with zero complaining. They train under the hood. They train down in the pit. 270 hours means their training's legit. It's the smart choice for smart folk who care for their steed. So trust the instant oil change that starts with Valvoline. Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Change wisely.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
And also, children being kidnapped from their homes is incredibly rare. But I mean, it's not impossible. But it seems hard to believe that someone could break in and take Sabrina, leaving very few clues behind. All that was found was one blonde hair in Sabrina's crib. Everyone in the family has dark hair. An unidentified boot print near the crib and some other unidentified fingerprints. Outside of the house, the neighbour said he was walking his dog past the Eisenbergs at 1 a.m. and heard the dog bark and the baby crying. So if we're going to say that someone in the house killed Sabrina, it could have been an accident or a malicious killing. I don't see a real motive. I'd say it's more likely to have been an accident. The reasons behind malicious murder of children by parents are wanting a child-free life, or it's because of abuse.
And there was absolutely no evidence of abuse in this case that really holds water. And there are two other kids. They have two other children, so killing Sabrina wouldn't have made them all young and carefree again. So if we say it was an accident, it could have been shaken baby syndrome, or one of the siblings could have done it, potentially.
She's only 5 months. Could it have been a cot death? Or do they have to be much younger for that?
But if it was a cot death, why would they cover it up? There hasn't been cot deaths in the family before. It's like they say, one cot death is a tragedy, two cot deaths is suspicious, and three cot deaths is murder. They didn't lose any other children this way.
I find cot death so interesting, though. It's such a prevalent thing, and we just don't know why. Babies just die sometimes.
What is it? SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Even the name is terrifying. But there would have been no reason to cover it up, so it must have been a known accident if it was them. But the point is that Sabrina was last seen alive by anyone outside of the family 48 hours before she was reported missing. So we can't even be 100% sure when she really did die, because no body has ever been found. So she could have died up to 48 hours before she was reported missing and that 911 call happens. We don't know. If we're saying that the family were involved and they disposed of her body, the police did do an incredibly in-depth search of a 5-mile radius around the Eisenbergs' house. They searched every lake, every swamp, anywhere you might dump a body, and they found nothing. So if the family did do it and cover it up, where's Sabrina's body? Tiny body, I guess even if you're looking through swamps, you might not have found her. And also Tampa, alligator country.
Just because there's no body, that doesn't really convince me of anything. Like, Florida's hot as fuck as well, and it's humid. So like that body is going to decompose so quickly. It's neither here nor there that there's no body, really.
I don't know, but they're not like career criminals. They're just like an ordinary family. And they were able go out somewhere, find a place, like a great hiding spot to hide a body. And the police, almost one of the accusations of the police becomes that they only actively looked for a dead body and they didn't find her. It's very difficult.
The police, as they always do, asked Marlene and Steve to go on TV and plead for their daughter's safe return. Again, people tear this video apart, saying that they look totally deadpan and there's no crying, but again, proves nothing. But the analysis into the Eisenbergs' behaviour became a real focus. There were newscasters everywhere, all around the house, all the time. They were constantly being recorded. And there's a point on the day of Sabrina's disappearance when Steve was caught on camera for a few seconds, laughing. He said that the police officers made a joke and he laughed. Why are the police officers making a joke when your baby's just been kidnapped? And we do see this in other cases where the parent turned out to be guilty, like Diane Downs or the Shannon Matthews case. It can be seen as like duping delight, like the person, the architect of the deception, loves the attention that the tragedy is bringing them because they love the fact that they are tricking all of these people. But it just doesn't really seem like that. Like, I don't think I've seen enough of it to be convinced that that's what it is. I think people are scrutinizing very small points and making overarching statements, which I just don't really think is fair. So it's weird, sure, but only because I can't imagine laughing in a situation like that. But he could have been in denial. Maybe it hasn't sunk in. I mean, maybe it was just nervous laughter. I know so many people who laugh when they're uncomfortable.
It's almost like a politeness thing. These police officers are there to help you. Your child has been kidnapped. One of them maybe says something to try cheer you up. I feel like you would laugh maybe just out of awkwardness or out of politeness. I don't know. I don't think it proves anything. But given how young Sabrina was, it wasn't just the police in the local department that were dealing with this, because the FBI were immediately involved with investigating her disappearance. So after the TV appeal, the FBI tapped the phones at the Eisenbergs' home to ensure they could track anyone who called with potential ransoms or information. But they hear something weird instead. The very first call that the Eisenbergs received was from Steve's brother, Dave. On this call, Steve tells Dave, "The detectives are doing their job. They're following every lead they have." It's honestly so casual and laid back. He says it like, "Oh yeah, they're doing everything they can." What? What family would ever think that enough was being done?
That's such a good point.
But it's not this that the FBI finds so weird. It's that while he's on the phone, and this is the key thing, it's not just the emotions or like, oh, he's so casual. It's the things that he's doing, the behavior. Because while he's on the phone to Dave, there's the beeping of call waiting. They're getting another call and Steve ignores it and carries on chatting to his brother. What if it had been the kidnapper? Would a father take a risk like that? Or did he just know already what happened to Sabrina and knew there would be no kidnapper trying to call? This is what the FBI thought, because in all their experiences doing cases like this with missing children, their experience was the parent always takes the call. And so the FBI felt that the parents knew much more than they were admitting, and they confronted them.
The family became incredibly angry at the police because they felt the police just immediately decided it was them and started looking for a body, not a live baby. And if this was true, you could say that's weird because people who steal babies don't steal them to kill them. They steal them to keep them or to sell them. But if the police thought the family had done it, then of course they were looking for a body. But the police, however, said that they were running two parallel investigations, one focused on the intruder and one on the family. But realistically, when a baby disappears, it's one in 1,000 times that it wasn't the family. I do think the police thought that their best bet was the Eisenbergs, and I can kind of see, it's like being like, oh, well, the husband did it. And whenever I see a kid disappearance, my first instinct is the parents did it.
At first, the Eisenbergs cooperated. The police even had them take polygraph tests, but these threw out some interesting results. Marlene's first polygraph test was deemed inconclusive. It was found that she had results that indicated deception. So she took another polygraph, but this time she failed altogether, according to the police. But how much, again, does this really prove?
Fucking nothing. Polygraphs are a joke.
They are. Like, polygraphs simply infer deception through analysis of physiological responses, such as your blood pressure or breathing rate, to a series of questions. The accuracy and validity of polygraph testing is undoubtedly controversial. The issue is there's no evidence that any pattern of physiological reactions or responses is unique to deception. An honest person may be nervous when answering truthfully, and a dishonest person may be totally chill while they're lying their asses off. Marlene's response was inconclusive, but she was probably dealing with issues around guilt anyway, whether she killed Sabrina or not. So it doesn't prove anything.
Actually, that's such a good point. I hadn't thought of that until just now. Like, of course she's feeling guilty whether she did it or not.
Exactly.
Because she left the fucking door open.
Exactly.
Or she killed her. One or the other.
One or the other. It doesn't prove it either way.
So at this point, the police are more convinced than ever. And Dave, Steve's brother, who is a lawyer, told them to get an attorney because, quote, they are out to get you. So the Eisenbergs hired an attorney named Barry Cohen, a man with a reputation for being one of the most aggressive and combative attorneys in the state of Florida. He also had a reputation at the time for never losing a case. You hire a lawyer like that. Do you have something to hide? But also, if I thought I was being railroaded by the police, that's what I would do. Get the best fucking lawyer I could. Barry Cohen is quite an interesting character in his own right. He's currently millions and millions of dollars in debt. Clients he's represented have included the likes of the family of the Boston bombers. He was a man who wasn't shy about putting his face to the case. He'd go on TV and chat to Larry King and also go and yell at that woman, Nancy Grace. I have very complicated feelings about Nancy Grace. She's problematic.
She's an odd one, but he goes on and he fights her. He yells at her. And also just other things with Cohen, things like in his office in Tampa. He apparently has like a Lady Justice. But she's like, really, I saw it described as coquettish because...
Oh, for fuck's sake.
The slit in the statue of the Lady Justice he has in his office has her thigh out.
Come on.
The article I read, it was like, a coquettish Lady Justice stands welcoming clients into Barry Cohen's office, looking more like a starlet who's been randomly handed a sword and a scale to dole out justice. He's a very bizarre man.
It's like having a hula girl.
Yeah, but... Lady Justice.
And in one of the TV appearances I saw with Cohen, and there are many, he kept saying the same thing. He says there's no evidence. There is no physical evidence, not one piece of physical evidence. If I was on trial for murdering a baby, I think I'd want my lawyer on TV to say I'm innocent, not just that they can't prove it.
At this point, they're only suspected, not on trial for murder. But yes, I would want him to not be on TV just yelling, there's no physical evidence, is there? You find any physical evidence? No physical evidence. He also went on TV shows like This Morning and all the news shows and just repeatedly and brutally attacked the police. In one case, he even yelled, it's a war. A war?
A war on what?
It's the police against my clients. Forget Sabrina. He's totally forgotten Sabrina in all of this. In any case, after they hired Barry, the Eisenbergs, under his advice, totally stopped cooperating with the police. Now the police, got an incredible warrant. They got permission to bug the Eisenbergs' house. And apparently you can get this if the police can make a strong enough case to a judge that there would be no other way for them to get the truth. It was their last chance with the Eisenbergs, and they did whatever they needed to do. So the police, after getting this warrant, set up listening devices in the kitchen and the bedroom of the Eisenbergs' house. And every day for 3 months, from 7 a.m. to midnight, the police listened in. And they recorded thousands of conversations. And what they found became hugely controversial in this case. But let's come back to it.
So now Sabrina has been gone for 2 months, and a federal grand jury was convened. The Eisenbergs were, of course, called to testify, but Barry Cohen told the family to invoke their Fifth Amendment right and not to testify. So they refused to testify to a grand jury looking into their daughter's disappearance. Cohen was totally ignoring the court of public opinion because, honestly, how does this look? They're not even on trial at this point.
Even the Ramseys testified at the grand jury.
And when asked, Cohen said he stopped them testifying because of Steve Kuntz, the man who was the lead prosecutor on this case. Cohen said Kuntz was fame hungry and just wanted a conviction at any cost and would destroy the Eisenbergs to get this. He's doing his fucking job, and like, you seem pretty fame hungry yourself. We will come back to that. So when the grand jury were hearing testimony minus the Eisenbergs, social workers turned up at the Eisenbergs' home to check if the two other children were being looked after. And if they are innocent, this is awful. But if they were guilty, given the state of the house, it's the right thing to do. And I think the state of the house on its own, that's enough to send social workers round.
But now, with months passing and no news of Sabrina, the accusations just build against the family. The community, especially after they refused to testify at the grand jury hearing, were convinced that they'd done it. The family still just seemed so emotionless and robotic. But they repeatedly said in every interview, even years later, that they didn't believe that Sabrina had been killed, but been taken to be loved. That is really important. It's definitely a possibility, like we've spoken about, especially given Sabrina's age. But it does seem like they were in denial and that they just can't face the truth. But if they really believe that she was taken to be loved by another family, then maybe their emotionlessness makes sense. If they'd convinced themselves of this so much and they really think that she's okay and one day she'll be found, maybe that's why. But given the community's feelings towards them and the fact that they were struggling financially, in May 1999, the Eisenbergs left Florida and moved to Maryland. Then on September 9th, in their new home, there's a surprise. Marlene was at home when suddenly all these cars pulled into the driveway. Marlene immediately called Barry. Weird. Would you call your lawyer or would you call your husband? She doesn't even know who these people are. There's just cars pulling into the driveway. Anyway, the people in the cars then broke into the house and were yelling, "Marlene, come downstairs." It was the FBI, and they were there to arrest her. And simultaneously, on the other side of town, other agents were picking up Steve.
Prosecutors now believed that they had an airtight case, so it was time to bring the Eisenbergs in. This newfound confidence in their case came from the recordings the police had secretly taken from the Eisenbergs' home. The pair were being indicted for conspiracy and lying to the police. The police said that in the recordings, they could hear the couple talking about killing their daughter and lying to the police. They said Marlene could be heard saying, quote, "The baby's dead and buried. It was found dead because you did it. The baby's dead no matter what you say. You just did it." And Steve was heard saying, quote, "We need to discuss the way we'll beat the charge. We will do what we have to do." At the bail hearing, a federal prosecutor said that she had heard on the tapes Steve saying, "I wish I hadn't harmed her. It was the cocaine." How much cocaine do you think you have to take to kill a baby? Fucking hell. Steve said that he'd never done drugs in his life, and the pair strongly claimed that they had never said any of what was listed in the indictment against them.
So 2 years since her disappearance, the police thought it was done. Because surely now, if the tapes say what they claim they said, it's an open and shut case. But oh dear, the tapes were played in court during the trial. And well, let's have a listen to what the courtroom heard. Did you hear anything?
No, you can't hear a fucking thing. But you can look at the documentary because...
Yeah, we'll post it.
When you put words under indecipherable sounds like that, You think you can hear them. It's like, it's a phenomenon.
Oh, 100%. But you really, you can't hear clear sentences, like the prosecution said, of them talking about murdering Sabrina, hiding her, talking about cocaine. What did come out of somebody who analysed it much more recently, with better equipment, everything, said that it sounded to him more like it picking up TV. They were watching a show and it was picking up sentences. This wasn't anybody in the house saying these things. You basically can't hear anything.
But also, what's the point in bugging someone's house? It must have been very difficult to get that warrant. What's the point in bugging a house if you can't even fucking hear what they're saying?
They did it badly. An analyst said afterwards that if you bug someone's house, it should be bang on. Even back then, given the technology they would have had, they should have been able to hear whispers up to 400 foot away. They botched how they'd put it into the house. And that is the fundamental thing you need to get right if it's going to work. But they didn't. It's a shit recording. And apparently, when the tapes were played in court, the judge just turned and looked at the prosecutor and glared at him because it was such shit. 2 years and this is what you bring to trial. It's absolute rubbish. But Cohen, Barry Cohen, the defense attorney, had also been able to get his hands on the tape, and he had submitted them to an ex-FBI analyst who testified in court that none of the sentences the police were claiming to have heard were there. I mean, to be honest, you don't even need him to tell you that. No one in the court could hear it. He said that the sentences and paragraphs from the indictment didn't even connect up and, quote, seemed totally made up. So to combat this, classic, the prosecution brought in their own audio expert and PI, Anthony Pellicona, whose clients included people like Michael Jackson and Elizabeth Taylor.
That's such a cool job.
He was a scumbag, though, and he had a really bad reputation. He was called the Big Sleazy.
Gross.
No, he's disgusting. He'd been in trouble with the police loads of times, and for serious shit. Things like slicing people's faces, beating people with baseball bats, and he was indicted himself soon after this trial for possessing illegal explosives.
What's a PI doing with explosives?
And also, what were the government doing stooping to this if their case was so solid?
Pellicona and the prosecution were apparently the only people who could hear the confessions on the tapes. Other things that came up in court was that Marlene was accused of lying to the police about the clothes she'd been wearing when she found Sabrina was missing. And the fact that she told police that Sabrina had a full head of hair, but in photos and videos from just days before she went missing, Sabrina had a bald patch. People make an enormous deal out of this, claiming that's a sign of abuse, but babies that age get bald spots all the time because they're lying down so much. You see that constantly. Their hair isn't even real hair, it's like fluff. And in court, the tape situation really undermined the police, and the prosecution's case collapsed. And now the whole case coming out, it was the feds who had tough questions to answer because the bugging apparently, not only was it shit, it didn't conform to state or federal laws. Because apparently the feds had told the judge that Marlene's 911 call was unemotional. And you heard it at the start of the episode. It's emotional. Whether it is or not seems pretty irrelevant in terms of guilt, that is. But it's important here because the defense were able to use this lie the police had told to claim police misconduct. So essentially, the bugging doesn't conform to state or federal law because they lied to the judge to get the warrant.
Exactly. Two judges who reviewed the tapes said that it was mostly unintelligible and called the prosecution's statements false and pure fiction. So the recordings were ruled inadmissible, and they were really the cornerstone of the prosecution's case against the Eisenbergs. With those gone, they really had no case. It was all circumstantial. It was all conjecture. And 1 week later, all charges against the Eisenbergs were dropped. Kuntz, the prosecutor on this case, well, things didn't work out too well for him either. He became one of the few federal prosecutors to be disciplined for professional misconduct. He was the one who claimed the admissions by the parents in the secret recordings were there, but they weren't. His actions were called vexatious, and he was punished for frivolous prosecution of the parents given a lack of evidence, and the Florida bar admonished him for misconduct.
Vexatious would be a really good drag queen name.
It's a great word. It's a great word. We don't say it enough.
I'm going to try and use it 3 times next week. So, some 20 years on from when she disappeared, Sabrina Eisenberg's whereabouts remain a mystery. The family are still convinced that she's alive and well and now a 21-year-old woman. They say they are determined to find her, and they've been putting together and releasing age-progressed photos of Sabrina every few years. In May 2003, in Illinois, there was a potential break in the case. A couple started adoption proceedings for a 5-year-old girl without a birth certificate. She was the right age, and people seemed convinced that this little girl, Paloma, looked just like Sabrina. But we really don't think so. We'll post pictures. It's a stretch. They tested Paloma's DNA, and it didn't match. It turned out that the mother had been a Mexican woman who had abandoned her baby on the Texas border. I'd say being called Paloma is pretty obvious that you're of Hispanic heritage.
And she's brown. The baby is brown. The Eisenbergs are white. Yes, they're dark, as in they have dark hair. They're not Mexican. At most, Paloma was at least half Mexican. The mother was Mexican. She doesn't look like Sabrina. I mean, what the fuck? Sabrina is pale in all her baby pictures.
A nurse at the clinic gave the baby to her sister, and the sister eventually adopted Paloma. So things work out fine for Paloma.
I do love the name Paloma, though.
Me too.
That is it's an adorable name.
Means pigeon.
Pigeon?
Yeah. Or dove.
No, that's nicer. I'm happy that Paloma is safe. That's all good. But Sabrina still remains missing. And Marlene still thinks she's out there, that it's only a matter of time before she comes home. And I understand not giving up, but Marlene keeps saying, and you still see this in interviews with her years later, well, when she comes home, everyone will see.
Will they?
I don't know. Does hope just destroy you? Has she even properly grieved for Sabrina because she still thinks that she's going to come home? And obviously, children do come home after years and years being missing.
Well, it's like that lady in Who Took Johnny?
Yeah, that's the case of the disappearance of Sabrina Eisenberg. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. As usual, you can find us on the social medias at Red Handed the Pod. You can give us some money if you would like to at patreon.com // Red Handed. Thanks, guys. See you next week where we'll be shit chatting Nancy Grace.
Bye. I don't know why I waved then. Bye.
Real value shows up in reliability. You don't have to second guess. Like a set of Firestone all-season tires. They're designed to deliver confidence-inspiring wet weather traction and a quieter ride, no matter the road, season after season. Firestone all-season tires. For durability, you can count on. Just like people count on you. Firestone. Always dependable. Since 1900.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
You know what quality feels like. You can see it in the way a fabric moves, recognize it in a flawless fit, and appreciate it in the details that make our styles unique. It's the standard Coldwater Creek has honored for over 40 years, derived from a rich Mountain West heritage and designed for today in styles that are distinctively Coldwater Creek. For a wardrobe you can count on season after season, visit coldwatercreek.com. Shop new arrivals and save 15% on purchases $75 or more with code IHEART.